And this is what we all need to do with our customers. They need us to help them solve real problems that they're in a hole with. And our job is not to get in the hole with them. Our job is not to throw a rope down. Like if you throw a rope down, you have to do all the work to pull them up. Our job is to make sure we throw them a ladder and that they're motivated to climb up the ladder.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Shelley Rose Charvet. There's three facts you should know about her. One, she is an expert in influencing and persuasion. She's the author of the book, the best-selling book, Words That Change Minds. And that book is now available in 15 languages, at least 15 languages at the last count. Second fact, Shelley works with organizations around the world. And these days, she also works remotely to help them understand what really motivates their clients. And the third fact, Shelley currently lives in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and she spends time in Berlin because her hubby is a Berliner. Along the way, she's also learned, she speaks English, French, Spanish, and she's working on her German. Guten Tag, ma.
Guten Tag für dich auch. Yeah, I've got a ways to go on the German, but I'm working on it. Yeah,
good. All I remember is the most important phrase was, which was "Ein Bier bitte."
Yeah, well, it depends what your priorities are, doesn't it? Yeah.
Shelley, glad to have you on the podcast with us today. In your book, it's about influencing people, and I can't think of a more important role for communication. And it's a, we use communications for entertainment, but what could be more important in influencing others? What key mistakes do you see people making a lot when it comes to attempting to influencing others?
Well, the very first mistake that people make is that they unconsciously believe, like sometimes they're not aware of having this belief, they unconsciously believe that other people think the same way they do. So the mistake they make is they use the same strategy to convince other people that they used to convince themselves of something. And then they're shocked and dismayed when other people don't just leap onto their bus and go wherever they want. They go, well, what's wrong with those people? Don't they get it? Well, the issue is they need to get it in a way that is different than how I get it or how you get it. And that's one of the very big mistakes.
So other people don't necessarily think like me. I can't find it hard to believe.
I know, isn't it? What are they, weird? Is there something wrong with them?
Didn't they go to school? Didn't they learn anything? Clearly they must understand me.
And I'm a logical person. Why aren't they? Yeah.
So how do we overcome that challenge? I suppose the first thing we need to recognize is that they aren't necessarily trying to be difficult. They just think differently and not necessarily wrong, just differently. That's so right. How do we overcome that challenge?
So this is what the book Words That Change Minds is all about. We need to understand that people have different values and criteria for making decisions. So what's important to me may not be important to them. Like one of the ways I like to convince people is I tell them things that are interesting. Well, interesting is my word for valuable and worth looking at. Wouldn't it be great if you asked somebody, well, how do you know something's worthwhile taking a look at? So George, let me ask you just for a minute, how do you know that something's worthwhile to take a look at?
Something to take a look at, depending, you mean a product or a location?
Yeah, a product or a service. Like how you have a limited amount of time like everybody else. So how would you know that a service, a product, a book is worth your time to go in more depth on? How would you decide that?
Well, on a book, I would look at the title and I'd look at the summary to see if the topic and the promise is of value to me or I see it as value.
Okay, so then your criteria is it needs to look as if it's of value to you. Well, that's a different set of words than interesting. So if I know that about you, I'm going to say, hey, George, I found a book that I think might be of value to you. Now, you're probably more likely to be interested than if I said, hey, George, I found a book that I think might be interesting for you, right?
Good point. Now, and that just hit me, Shelley, so clearly because, yeah, I told you the truth. I want a book of value. I love to read. And if you told me this book is interesting, I don't care.
Whereas you'd get all my attention if you said that, right? I'd go, okay, let me look into this. And you'll also know I did something else. I didn't tell you you should look at it because it's of value, because that's what I call command language. Most people do not want to be told what to do, even if you've done it indirectly. So if I say things like I suspect or I think or you may, it's an invitation rather than a command. And see, the second mistake that I talk about is that people get enthusiastic. And there's nothing wrong with enthusiasm, except if you do it on someone else, maybe they don't want you to decide for them whether they're going to like something. So inviting somebody rather than saying, oh, you're going to love this book, or this is exactly the thing you've been looking for, or you need this, right? These are all kinds of words that close minds rather than words that open minds.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. When people tell me you should do this, especially people in the family.
Yes, exactly.
I just shut down. I don't want to know what they think I should do.
Yeah. And this happens in meetings at work all the time. You know, someone raises an issue and they say, okay, we've got this challenge coming up. And then someone gets a bright idea and says, I know what we should do. Well, the word should just slams the other person's brain closed and it's off the table, even if it was a good idea. And the other person's saying, it was a good idea. Why didn't they take it? Well, we have to be careful about how we offer suggestions to other people because people don't want to be talked down to. They don't want to be bossed around. They don't want to think that somebody's telling them what they should do as if they didn't already know. So we have to be careful. And the language of suggestion and invitation, in my experience, works much better.
Now, that's interesting. That might explain some of the reasons why during the pandemic, some people are unwilling to wear a mask because they're told they should?
Well, you know, it's very interesting looking at the anti-maskers and the anti-vaxxers and the anti-this and the anti-that. I think there's a real difference in values to start with, but I think you're absolutely correct. The more command language used, the more certain people resist. Now, these same people stop at stoplights, drive on the correct side of the road, eat their vegetables or whatever it is. And yet when it comes to some things, because it crosses their values the wrong way, they're completely closed to it. And part of it is the command language. It triggers something into them. And, you know, we don't know their past history. We don't know what traumas they've lived through, why these things are triggering that. But one thing we do know is that people that are very, very convinced of their rightness, it's very difficult to open that box again. It takes an awful lot of effort and you can't do it in one phrase or one sentence or one anything. It's a whole process to open people's minds that are that firmly convinced of their rectitude, their rightness. You know, that's one of the things that people often do is they fling themselves at a closed door and you just get hurt by doing that. And we need to strategically think about who can we be more convincing of and who can't we? And I know in society that brings up a whole pile of other thoughts. Yeah, but what about this? What about that? But if you think about who do you have the best chance of being convincing to, then that can help your strategy in your personal life and in your business. Like, who are the people that are the most willing to listen to you? You know, as a general influencing strategy, who are the kinds of clients that are likely to say yes to your service or product offerings sooner? And this is one of the things I help companies actually figure out. who are the people that are the most likely to say yes the quickest?
In searching for who the people are most likely to say yes to working for us or buying from us, is that a matter of finding people who think like us, or is it trying to understand those people better? Or is it a combination?
Sometimes you don't want the person that thinks like you. Like if you're very goal-oriented and you have a very positive outlook and you're very goal-focused, one of the downsides of that, you may be thinking downsides of being positively goal-focused, is that you can be a little bit naive as to what are the problems that are about to happen. Now, I've been an angel investor. I'm on the board of a couple of companies and a couple of nonprofits. And one of the things that I do is I help these very optimistic people figure out what are the challenges and obstacles that are going to come up in the way that need to be solved. And sometimes if you're so goal-oriented, you need someone else, not necessarily to prick a hole in your balloon, but to say, hey, wait a minute, there's these things that are gonna happen and we need to be prepared. The key is learning how to not only get somebody who's complimentary, who's gonna fill out the things that you need when you're looking for a teammate, for example, but also learning how to communicate with them. So if you have a preference for being very goal-oriented in your work, we call that being toward. You're moving towards your goals, and you've hired a teammate to figure out what could go wrong and to fix it. That person is probably more problem-focused, or what we call away from, that they see the things that we need to move away from or fix or solve. Well, both of you need to learn how to communicate with the other person. So if you're the goal-focused person, I need to tell you the benefits. Well, when we find these obstacles, we'll be able to solve them quicker and get to our goals quicker. But if I'm talking to someone who has a preference for this problem focus and this away from, then I'd have to say, well, the reason we want to identify challenges before they happen is so we don't get blindsided by them. So we use away from language or toward language. And that depends on who we're talking to. And the same thing with your clients. Do you have clients that go, I want that? And they're in? Well, they're goal focused, they're toward. Or do you have clients who need your services because they're trying to move away from a problem? You can't convince them with benefits. You have to convince them with what problems will be fixed, solved, and negative consequences they won't have to deal with anymore. So it's really kind of important to get a sense of what is motivating that person or this group of people.
You know, Shelley, while you're saying that, I never considered that before, but I can picture people I've worked with. And yes, there are those who have been focused on a goal, or they want to deliver a winning sales presentation. And then there's others who the away from people, because they just simply, they want to stop feeling so uncomfortable when they're speaking to others, when they're presenting. So the two different types of people. And I never thought that they need different language.
That's right. See, the people that are feeling uncomfortable and don't want, they listen to the language, they don't want to feel that way, they need you to show them that you've understood that. And you can say, this program will make sure that you're not feeling uncomfortable. You won't have to worry about what to say next. And you talk about all the things that they don't have to suffer from. Right. And then talk about the benefits. You can say, so that then you're more confident and you get the results you want. But if you don't do that first, it kind of misses the boat. Like it doesn't go into them. It kind of goes around. We're very finely attuned to picking up the language and the behavior that suits us at that time. And of course, really, we're not away from all the time or towards all the time. It's very contextual. You know, some people go on away from vacations. Like they just want to get away from their normal routine. Other people back in the days when we could take vacations would go, I want to go fishing or I want to go scuba diving. And that's a toward vacation. And I keep thinking you better talk about it with your family if you're going on vacation with them, because some of them may be going towards and others are going away from. So something to talk about.
So direction of
movement. Yeah.
Movement is critical. And the way we can discern that is by listening to the type of words. Are they pursuing or are they running away from?
Exactly. And running away doesn't mean you don't want to deal with the problems. It means that the problem is the motivation trigger. You go, oh, I've got to do something about this. I've got to prevent it or avoid it or fix it. If you can ask a question and that will help you decode where someone is, or you can just listen to them. The question to ask is, why is this value or this criterion important to you? So from our conversation a little earlier, why is it important to you that something be of value to you before you look into it? Why is that important?
Because I don't like to waste my time or money, even though I do at times.
So because I don't like to waste my time or money, that's an away from answer, right? So when you ask the question, why is their value or their criterion important to them? They will tell you either because I want something or because I want to avoid something. And that is the indicator. And just in normal speech, without even having to ask that question, listen to what someone says after the word because. But because is a signal that they're either going to move towards something or away from something. And you can get a real sense of where someone is just live in a conversation. Right. But, you know, if you want to do this more automatically, we've developed a software tool that's embedded in Outlook and soon to be in Google Chrome that will automatically identify these triggers that they come from a profiling tool called the Language and Behavior Profile, or Lab Profile for short. And our tool, which is called Libretta, enables people to download it as an add-in into email. And when you receive an email that you think you better think about before you answer, like maybe it has consequences if you don't say the right thing, then the tool, Libretta, will actually identify toward and away from. It'll tell you whether the person likes to decide for themselves or wants your outside guidance. It tells you whether they want options, like lots of choices and possibilities, or if they want a procedure, they want to know how to do something, or they want to know what the next steps are. And then you can answer the email and Libretta will tell you whether or not it fits. It gives you a fit score. Does your answer fit the incoming email? And it'll tell you what to adjust. And anything over 50% on the fit score is good to go. It's good enough. So we can't tell you what to say in this piece of software, but what we can do is show you what language to use to best get your communication across for what was motivating the other person at that time. So it's not a personality profile. It's about motivation.
Now that's fascinating because I think people really mess up when using email, and a lot of angry, poorly written emails have been sent. And that could save, that software could save and a lot of relationships. How can people find that?
They just have to Google libretta.com, libretta.com. It's a very small monthly subscription. And right now it's in Outlook for Windows. And shortly, we're working on the last programming. It'll be in Google Chrome, which means you can use it in any Google Doc.
Oh, fabulous. Okay. And I'll be sure to include a link to that in the description of the podcast. Shelley, in the book, the subtitle is 14 Patterns for Mastering the Language of Influence. 14 patterns. Now, that to me seems like a lot to keep track of. Might there be one, two, or three patterns that are most prominent, most relevant that people, I'm not going to say should, but could, if they're going to invest their time to learn to recognize, what might be those one, two, or three patterns?
So are you asking me which ones are of the most value?
Most value. You got it.
You got just wanted to know I was listening. Can I also decode your question before I answer it? You asked, like, there are 14 patterns. And yes, you're right. There are a lot, but they're for different purposes. So you don't always have to use all 14. But your question, embedded in your question, was a hint for how I need to answer. Embedded in your question was, is there one, two, or three patterns that are of more value, right? That's what you asked me. Well, you didn't say, what is the right pattern to use for this? Or how do you use this if there's 14 patterns? You did not ask me for a procedure on how to use the language and behavior profile or how to use the patterns in the book. You asked me, is there one, two, or three patterns that are of most value? And what that is an indicator of, at that moment in time, you're motivated by the options. And you don't want too many, but one, two, or three possibilities are okay. Now, if I were then to then tell you, well, here's how you use the lab profile, and this is why these patterns are important, I'm not answering your question at a below conscious level. I'm not answering the trigger that you gave me. I have to start by telling you the possibilities and the options. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, you're right. I'm analyzing, running back to tape and analyzing what I said. Yes. And you got it.
So then here's how I need to answer that question. I go, well, yes, there's a few options. There's a few possibilities that are actually more important.
Okay, Shelly, I'll interrupt you and I'll just decode what you just said. When you said there's a few, right off the bat, you attracted my attention because I only want a few. and that's what I was looking for. So you addressed my need by using that word, and I'm willing to listen, as opposed to if you'd come back and say, well, George, all 14 of them are important, I would have shut down.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you want options, but you made it really clear you don't want too many, right? So there are a couple that are really, really important. The toward and away from we just talked about is very, very important. Do you know there are lots of conflicts between people, organizations, countries that are moving in opposite directions? So I would invite people to listen in any strategic conversation. Is the person you're talking to or the group you're addressing trying to get rid of or avoid or solve or fix or prevent something? Or do they want something? And to make sure your language matches this goal orientation, the benefit, here's what you'll get, here's what we're trying to achieve. Or if we fix this, we won't have to deal with this problem ever again. So begin to do that triage already in your language. Think about your audience. Who are these people? How do I get to their bus stop? And I like to think of it in terms of bus stop. So I'm at my bus stop, my audience, whoever that is, my colleagues, my family, my potential clients, my current clients, they're at their bus stop. So my job is to figure out how to get there. And we can do it linguistically and behaviorally by using language and behaviors that help them get to where they want to go or get away from where they don't want to be. Now, in the world of sales, I want to give you one little tip about that. People make decisions, generally speaking, because there's exceptions, faster when there is an urgent problem to solve rather than a goal. I mean, think about your daily life. You know, you get your email in the morning. Which ones do you answer first? The ones that are screaming at you that are an emergency rather than the ones that are important that are going to get you to your goals. We always do emergencies first. So in terms of sales, there's a shorter sales cycle. If you can figure out what are the problems that someone has. Now, you hear that all the time in sales training, but then you have to go to the next step and make sure you use that away from language. So the toward away from, that's one. And there's another one I'd like to talk to you about. And I've mentioned it briefly before. That's internal and external. If someone is in internal mode, it means they want to decide for themselves. They don't want to be told what to do. They like to be asked for their opinion and they want to decide for themselves. So you forget the shoulds and you should, I have some feedback for you or everybody's doing this. Doesn't work. We offer them information and invite them to decide so that they can decide for themselves. So I've been reading a lot about this language and behavior profile stuff recently. Stuff is not a word to use. Material. I can hear Patricia Fripp in my head saying, don't say stuff. Yeah. Anyway, I've been reading a lot about this material and I found it of value to the work I was doing. I'd love to know what you think about it. Can I share some information with you and find out what you think? Now, that is so much more powerful for someone who wants to decide for themselves rather than, oh, I've got great stuff for you. You're going to love it. And you'll find it really useful in all the things you're doing. It's like, I'm deciding for you. And that doesn't work if the person has gone internal.
And, you know, that's interesting. One of my pet peeves is when I'm listening to a presenter, a speaker, and one of the phrases they use is, oh, I just love this quote. I don't really care.
Yeah.
It's about them. They're not letting, let me decide if it's any good.
So how would you rephrase that just in the light of what we've said?
Oh, how to to deliver that. Instead of saying, I just love this quote. This quote, you might find this quote helpful or useful. You might find that it illustrates the point.
Exactly. You might find, or here's a quote and you might find it useful for, right? But inviting them to decide. You may find, you may not like it, or you may find it useful, like their choice. You know, recently in direct marketing, there's been a lot of studies about how to get an increased response rate. And they found that if you end a sentence with, but it's up to you, you don't have to do this, but it's up to you, increases the number of responses you get. Well, why is that? Well, because people want to make their own decisions in certain circumstances, and they don't want to be told they have to do this. So you could say we've had lots of pickup on this. Lots of people have taken up us up on our offer, but you don't have to do it. It's up to you. If it works for you, take it. It's very powerful language because people want to be able to choose in many circumstances. Now, but we don't always want that. The other pattern in this continuum is external. And that's when you're not sure. Like sometimes, like right now I'm speaking directly into the camera. I have no idea what I'm looking like. So I want to have some feedback to know. So George, is this okay?
Yes,
it is. I'm doing all right now?
You bet.
Oh, well, great. Yeah. So sometimes we need to get that feedback because I'm not looking at the image on the screen. I'm looking at the camera. Or there's times when organizations really, in my opinion, should go external, like to their customers. You know, when customers are upset, sometimes they think, oh, these customers are so unreasonable. Well, the customer has a message. And if you're internal, when the customer is trying to tell you something, you dismiss the message that the customer is trying to get to you, when in fact, hidden in there somewhere could be some very, very useful information. And when you're doing surveys or trying to figure out what customers want, it's important to be external to them. Like, let their comments come in. Believe them when they tell you something and don't just judge it as good, bad, right, wrong.
Can we shift from one to the other?
These are not personality traits. These are motivations. And so they shift by context, and you can even shift them voluntarily. Like, so for example, I can shift myself into external when I'm getting feedback from people and let it in and take it in. When I, as a trainer, when I'm training people in these skills, that one of the most important things I do is establish my credibility. Why? So that people who are learning from me will drop the internal and go, well, I don't know if that's a good idea. Well, I'm not convinced. And they go external to my expertise so that they can take it in and learn it. If you haven't correctly or enough established credibility, your audience will stay skeptical. And instead of taking in what you say, they evaluate what you say. So they're going, I'm not sure I agree with that. Oh, that I agree with. That's a good idea. I could think about that. But this is all intellectual. They're not letting it in. So that's why being credible is so important. And, you know, it's different for men and women and also for people of color, because white men are assumed, I'm making a generalization, to have credibility, and women and people of color have to earn it still. But if you're not thinking about how will I ensure that my credibility is established with a group, you can make some big mistakes there too. Because if you're trying to be persuasive, you want people to believe you. And being credible, as well as likable, of course, will help you be more believed. What do you think? I mean, that's what I think, George. What do you think?
And that certainly makes sense to me. And I'm glad that you asked my opinion, because I have a need to express it. Because here I am talking to an expert that I want to be seen as having some opinion of value as well. Isn't that funny? I find that curious. We could dissect this conversation.
We could. And there, a value came back again. And that's key. Most people repeat their values over and over again. So if we really listen to what somebody comes back to, we'll know what is motivating and important to them. And if you can reflect that back to a person, they will have a deep sense that you do understand them. Some people are afraid, well, aren't they going to think you're manipulating them? And I think there's a big difference between manipulating somebody and influencing them with integrity. Anybody can try to be manipulative and try to convince somebody of something, but then we often are trying to put our stuff on them. And people may not necessarily be aware of what you've done, but the trust level goes down. And so what do you really want in relationships? You want to increase trust or decrease it? And so listening and reflecting back to a person that you get what was important to them can increase trust. Now, how you do that, it also matters. And what you do with their values once you've understood them, that also matters.
To increase trust, we listen to the patterns, the words, and use the same words or similar words.
In terms of criteria and values, use exactly the same words. You know, in this 80s and 90s, I was a communication trainer. I started in the early 80s, and we learned a technique that's called active listening. And the definition of active listening is paraphrasing back to the other person to check that you understand what they meant and to communicate to them that you're making a good attempt at understanding. But we now understand that the words someone uses are the words that resonate for them. They're meaningful for them. They have they cause an emotional trigger. So if I change your words, it's not quite the same. I'm much better off to understand the words that you emphasize, the words you repeat, the words you come back to, and show you, at least at an unconscious level outside of your awareness, that I'm going to get what's important to you. And that's why it is important to play those things back rather than just answer somebody's question, right? They want to know you got their answer first.
Shelley, what if the words that the other person is using are, and the phrases are negative? Do you repeat the negative words?
Talking about a special case here, and I want to go into this special case. Sometimes people are in a negative, stuck state. I'm hopeless. Nothing's working. And you don't necessarily want to reinforce that. It's like pushing them deeper in the hole. And we all know that you can't get out of a hole by digging. You only get deeper into a hole. And I don't know why we have that silly expression in English, dig your way out of a hole, because we can't. But so they're in a stuck state. Let me give you an example. Someone is unhappy with their relationship with their boss, and they tell you, my boss is a jerk. Well, and this comes from Connie Ray Andreas's work on verb tenses. She said, when someone uses that universal present, my boss is a jerk, what they really mean is, in the past, my boss was a jerk. In the present, my boss is busy being a jerk. And for the foreseeable future, my boss is going to be a jerk. Now, if I'm saying that, there is no mental space for anything to change. And your question was quite right. Do you want to reinforce that? You do, but you want to put it where it really belongs, in the past, in the up to now. So what you could say to the person, so your boss has been a jerk, has been, goes right up to the present time. And then you want to find out, is there any mental space for something else to occur? And you test. And so you say, so your boss has been a jerk. Is that right? If the person says yes, it means that at an unconscious level, they have agreed to put it into the past up till now. And there's a vacuum. There's space from the present to the future. Now, don't wait too long. Ask the next question, which is outcome focused. Well, what kind of relationship would you like to have with your boss? And then you can get them to develop a representation of a relationship. Well, I'd like it to be like this. And then you can talk to them about how they might do that. So that's a way of making sure you go to their bus stop, but that you be helpful. You know, people who are stuck, they don't really want to be stuck. It may look like they want to be stuck, but they don't really. And we can help them by using that has been. You have been having this issue. This issue has been bothering you. If you say it was bothering you, that's not credible because it's too far in the past. So in the up to now. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I see the difference between has been and versus was, and certainly the difference between has been versus is.
Yeah.
Because too many of us, I've heard, probably done the same thing, said, this is the situation. Well, maybe it has been, but it doesn't have to stay necessarily that way.
That's right. And you don't want to commit a negative future. You don't want to commit to a negative future. And so I invite your listeners, I invite people watching this to begin to listen for that universal present. If someone is saying this problem is an issue for us, there's no mental space to solve it because they've covered all the time frames, past, present, and future. And that's why reframing it for them by repeating back their words. So this has been an issue. Is that right? And that key sentence, is that right? Is you are asking the person to recode how they put the problem into the immediate past. Now, if they disagree with you, they go, no, it is a problem. Say, tell me more. They just need to get the rest of it off their chest. And we have this lovely expression, off your chest. In French, we say, vide son sac. You know, you have to empty your bag. And it's true. If there's a lot of negative stuff going on, it's hard to get to something else until you unload all that. So they are not quite ready yet. Get them to tell you more. And then you summarize that in the up to now. So, and this and this and this has also been an issue for you. Is that right? And you wait until they're ready. And then you go, okay, well, I'm wondering, how would you like it to be? Like, what would you like to have happen instead? And you have a look of curiosity in your tone of voice and in your on your face and help them develop that representation. Great for families. This is great for teams. And this is what we all need to do with our customers. They need us to help them solve real problems that they're in a hole with. And our job is not to get in the hole with them. Our job is not to throw a rope down. Like if you throw a rope down, you have to do all the work to pull them up. Our job is to make sure we throw them a ladder and that they're motivated to climb up the ladder, not keep sitting in the hole waiting for someone else to come in and sit there with them, right?
Hmm. So it could be as simple as recognizing the tense and changing the tense that changes the perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, most people are not aware of the language you use. They're thinking about what you said and what they said and what they're going to answer. So if you can do this, it's a very gentle way of helping someone out of a hole so that they can move towards where they want to go. Listen to my language, move towards where they want to go and not stay stuck.
You just did both. You did the towards and the away from in the same sentence. So it's okay to do that. And is that the type, should marketers, should companies, when sending their marketing message, should they use both types of language because they might be attracting both types of customers?
I think they need to test. And it's really important to test. And this is part of the work I do. One of the things I do is help companies identify with their key ideal clients or avatars, as it's called sometimes. What is the buying journey? And the only way to know is through testing. So I actually help them develop what is the buying journey, but then we have to test it and refine it. I'll give you an example. Somebody who lives not far from us, George, back in the days when you could start your day with a cup of coffee, I would have coffee with a group of people at Tim Hortons. And one of the gentlemen was an engineer, and his small business is creating sunrooms for people. And I asked him one day, because I was curious, because of course he does Google Ads to get customers. And I said, so do your customers buy because they don't like how dark it is in the winter and how small their places are and they want to open them up with a sunroom? Or do they buy a sunroom because they want more light, right? One is away from, one's toward. They don't want the dark and it's too small, and or they want more room and more light. And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, would you be into testing? So I wrote the ads for him. Right? Some in away from language, some in towards, and set it up in Google to do a test. And what was interesting is up to then, all of his ads had been toward. Keep more light, more space, more this, more that, because that's how he thought about it. And what happened is we saw almost the same number of clicks on the away from as on the toward. Now, that does not mean you put toward and away from language in the same ad, but it means you need to talk to away from people and toward people about their sunrooms. Sometimes you need to use both. So it's a process of guessing and testing. So I help people with that guessing and figuring out how to test Right. And with advertising today and the fact that you get quick responses or non-responses can really let you know quite quickly what are the motivators. And one of the other things to find out is in someone's buying journey, like they don't just come across your site and all of a sudden they buy stuff. In their buying journey, which step are they the most external? Like they're looking for a solution, but they don't know the answer, because that is the step where you potentially can have the greatest impact and get the quickest positive responses back. So I help companies figure that out.
Shelley, my last question to you before we wrap up is this. If you could put it in one sentence to tell people why they should look at your book, Words That Change Minds, what would you say?
I would say if you're willing and able and you want to look at how your customers and your team function differently from you, and if you want to figure out how to motivate them better or how to be more convincing, it might be interesting or it might be of value to you to have a look at the book.
And I plan to go back and read it again, because there's a lot of useful material in there that takes time to internalize.
Yeah.
And my guest today is Shelley Rose Charvet, helping you go to their bus stop, but it's up to you.
It's always up to you.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.